Hi, guys. Here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. Yep, that's good. Then I stare at a red light. It's the kind that helps your cells positively glow. Oh, wow, really bright. Okay. Next, I take an ice bath. That's how you melt your fat and fix your, I don't know, other stuff. Ooh, yep, feeling super healthy. Can't feel my toes. Breakfast is raw liver. Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Talking Heads podcast. In this episode, we're going to be reviewing four different business podcasts. Going to be reviewing the How I Built This podcast with Gary Vee, the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast, Dave Ramsey's show, and the BPD podcast. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to the Talking Heads podcast. In this show, we take great snips from other shows, shine a bit of light, add a bit of context, and always add some humor. We are not affiliated with any of the shows mentioned in the podcast. However, if you are interested in the shows discussed, you can easily find them by going to the link in the podcast. And now, to the show.
And the real world is not an idea. It is not words. Reality is...
All right, guys, get your business panties on. I'm here with Adam.
What's up, guys?
So we did the thing where we reviewed a couple of the horror podcasts. We just reviewed a bunch of them in the show, and we got a lot of feedback saying that people liked when we did multiple reviews in one show. So we're doing it with business podcasts. Nice. There's a lot of them. I only picked four of them.
That's enough.
They were ones that I felt we could talk a bit about. So where do we start? You want to talk about Gary Vee?
Let's do him first.
All right. So Gary Vee. So the How I Built This podcast is actually an NPR podcast. And this episode is, I think, like a year ago was recorded. But it's still a great podcast. And I think it's a really good example of their show. But yeah, I mean, Gary Vee, what a legend.
Yeah. I mean, he's the motivational guy online, and he gets a lot of stick for it. People make fun of him a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does get hate every now and then, but I like him. I like, one thing that I like about Gary Vee is he's, you know, like Gordon Ramsay or like Joey Diaz, like they're always going to tell you the facts, but they're just going to add a couple of curse words in it. Sure. And I think people don't like that about them sometimes. They get a lot of flack for that. I mean, maybe not Joe Diaz just because it's Joe Diaz, but like people are like, oh, why do you curse so much or whatever? And
yeah, there's a bit of that, I think.
But I mean, it's necessary. Like if you listen to what he's saying, he's still very, very intelligent, and
sure,
he's going to say something that you're going to learn from.
And you've got to bring some realism and energy to things. I think that's why Gordon Ramsay's always done so well.
Yeah.
I mean, he was known as like the angry guy in the kitchen that just was nothing but profession. Like professional, like perfection. Everything had to be amazing, and he would get you there with the angriest shit. And in a way, it's not like Gary Vee shouting at you to do stuff, but he's just trying to be as real as possible. Like, get the fuck out of here with this. Get it done.
Yeah,
don't
exactly
be a loser. Like, get work done. Hustle. Blah, blah.
Yeah. That message is very delivered in a lot of different ways by a bunch of people. You know, like you have like the David Goggins, and then you have like, you know, Gary Vee and all these other people, but a lot of their message is the same of just like, you know, cut the shit, you know, stop making excuses. There's no reason. That's what I love about Gary is there's so many times where he's just like, look, guys, why are we complaining right now? We live in the most advanced society ever. There's no other time in history where it's easier to build a business than right now.
Right. It's so true.
Yeah, and he always says that. I liked this podcast because you kind of get to hear a little bit about of the backstory behind Gary Vee and so how he started and everything. I didn't know his whole story before listening to this, but I mean, I knew a little bit about it, but I had no idea how much of an impact he had on his family's wine business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he absolutely grew their business immensely.
Yeah, that's all I really knew about him is that he came from somehow selling wine.
Yep.
And moved into all the other different areas. But, you know, obviously hearing the backstory, you kind of hear the parallels.
Yeah.
Of like how he moved from one thing to another. It's not like his expertise was selling wine. His expertise was like learning how to sell things or get people's attention or
exactly.
just find out what had value. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was one thing I got away with, too, was, I mean, you can hear like this guy was the same. He was doing the same stuff back in the day that he's doing now. Like he still has his hustle. He still has incredible view of the future. Like that's one thing I love about Gary Vee is he is one of the first people to be like, hey, guys, this new thing, it's huge. And we need to get on this because this is going to change everything. And if you look at like he was right about that with the Internet. Back before, it was like, we were talking about this before the show, but there was that stage where the internet was kind of like seen as a lot of people as like kind of a hoax or like it was not going to be mainstream. Like people
right.
thought it was a joke, but he's like, no guys, this is huge. I loved the clip he was talking about when he was working at his parents' wine business, when he was setting up the thing, he said he would go up to every single person that walked in the door of the liquor store and he would demand their email or he would like not demand obviously he's a salesperson
yeah,
but
yeah.
he would not let them leave without giving them or getting their email from them to add them to this newsletter
right
that he was doing but like that amount of dedication is great
and it was early on too it was before you know people put a ton of value on email lists
yeah
I mean they're worth a lot I don't know how much they're worth now, like in the sense of
yeah.
because if you look through your email today,
just
you
tons.
Have so many newsletters from like every kind of product that you've ever bought. I don't know if it has the same impact, but it definitely did once.
Yeah, that was one thing I had no idea about too was how big of a deal email was back then. I mean, mm-hmm. It came out before texting did. So that was like the way that people were communicating.
Oh, yeah.
But nowadays, I mean, I feel like people. Unless you're a professional or something, email's usually just used for that stuff or, you know, like when you buy something.
Right, you get a receipt.
Yeah.
You look up your airline flight.
Stuff like that. But I never – actually, that's not true. I do have a bad habit of looking at, like, the promotion side of my email, and then I'll get distracted and, like, you're like, oh, I wonder what kind of sale they're having or whatever. But most of that stuff, I'm just like, this is nonsense. I don't want it at all.
Another thing I really liked is – so – you know, he was getting in trouble, wasn't doing well in school, was getting grounded all the time because he just wasn't interested. So then his mom would put him to work in the store, or his dad would. It was just expected, you know, he immigrated here. It's just like, you know, immigrant mentality. It's that kind of hard
yeah.
work ethic, put the hours in, you know, whether it's dream big or not. But it's like, we've got something that works here. Now you're in the family, get to work. And he noticed something really interesting that he kind of expanded on was when customers came in the store, they always turned a certain way and they would turn maybe left, right, as soon as they come in. And his dad would have all the crappy products that never get sold on that side.
Yeah.
And he was like, Dad, why don't we just put the stuff over there that's good, you know?
Yeah.
And all of it sounded kind of obvious, but it's like, people don't think about that
no.
stuff when they're setting up
a business.
I thought
it was so cool. I mean, the fact that he was able to notice that stuff from like such a young age and like the fact that his brain was thinking like that from that early start is like really just shows how much like of a business person he is, like
right.
just at his core.
Yeah, it's
but
that
I mean,
hustle.
Yeah, that's huge. Like that kind of those little kind of things, like that's why they put the milk in the back of grocery stores so you have to walk all the way through to get like just your easy, quick, and go stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all strategic. All of that stuff is.
Right.
And it's so little, like, people don't notice that, but it makes a huge difference.
And why candy is always at the checkout.
Yeah.
Because yep. now you stood there, you're probably hungry, you've got all this food, and then it's like, here's the instant high you can
yeah.
take away with you.
Yeah.
A Kit Kat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no. I mean, that guy is so smart, though. I mean, he from and then
what
so,
is he worth now? Is he like in the hundreds of millions? Is he that type of rich?
I've heard him talk about how he would love to buy the fuck. I don't know if it's the Jets or the Giants. I want to say it's the Jets.
I think it's the Jets. Yeah.
If it's the Giants, I'm going to feel bad because I know they hate each other. But I'm pretty sure it's the Jets. He's like a big Jets fan, and he's talked about like buying the team before.
Yeah.
Which I would love to see.
How much do you need for that? A billion?
Fucking a lot. I don't know. NFL aren't the Jets? Team. Aren't yeah, the, don't deal. The Jets like not suck anymore too?
I don't know.
Like not? Because I know for a while the Jets were awful
when they were pretty new. Which is when did they come around? Like early 2000s.
I don't know.
I think.
No, I think they've been around for a while.
Oh, they have? Well, early 2000s, I went with a buddy of mine when I was in New York, and that was the first NFL game, and only, I think, that I've ever gone to. It was a good time, though.
Yeah. Isn't their stadium still a dump? Don't they share that one stadium? Or no, that's the Red Sox stadium.
Yeah.
That place is a dump.
The one I went to back then wasn't great as well.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
So the Jets were 1960, actually. So they're one of the older organizations.
Way off. Yeah. Maybe they moved the stadium. Like, so they'd had some sort of change.
Yeah, I think there was some big change. But I just remember, like, when I was in high school watching football with my uncle, like, the Jets, it was so funny to dog on the Jets because they were ass. I don't know if they're good now. They got Rodgers now. But, anyways, getting back to Gary Vee, I thought it was really cool. Like, we kind of hear about his whole wine thing and how that exploded. And then he is just like, I'm going to leave my parents. I'm not going to take anything from them, even though I pretty much built this entire thing, you know, with them. But he was like, I'm going to do my own thing. My parents helped raise me. They can have this. That'll suit them for the rest of their lives.
That's
and then
awesome.
He went his own thing and did all this tech stuff. But we need not forget where Gary Vee came from. We have to remember that he was still the wine dork, and I've got a great clip for you guys.
Identifying a wine's flavor, it's not always so easy, so how do you do that?
Pickle juice, eggnog, broccoli and cabbage, Mr. Bubble's spatzo, asparagus pee-pee, Campbell's tomato soup.
The flavors are melting on my tongue.
Ridiculous.
But that's where that guy started. Anyways, great episode. I didn't listen to any of the other episodes from How I Built This, but the guy interviewing seemed pretty good, so I would recommend that podcast. So moving on, the next podcast that we talked about was the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So I guess this is from a dude who went to Stanford, so he's really smart, and it's a quick podcast. The episodes are like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But they're perfect because they have, like, there's usually a talking point. Usually it has something to do with communications or, like, behavior. It's usually pretty scientific. But they have an expert on, and then mm-hmm. they, in not a scientific way, like, it's not hard to understand. You could, a middle schooler could listen to this podcast and learn something.
Right. It's kind of like a more chill TED Talk.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But it definitely has information in that could be useful.
Yeah, and I think that the format that they have is perfect for this podcast. A quick little whatever, but so we talked about a couple, or we listened to a couple of ones. One of them was Building Habits, and that was with BJ Fogg. So the episode was with BJ Fogg, and they talked about this thing, which is the information action fallacy, which is basically the idea that just telling someone information does not mean that they're going to change their behavior in any way.
Right.
And they were listing out there's these four step or these three things that you need to have for an action. So for you to do something, you need these three things: the ability, motivation, and a prompt.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of break down in those three things how they work. So ability, if you're not able to understand or do something physically, you're not going to be able to do it and you're not going to want to. Motivation, you have to actually want to do what you're doing. And this is where I think a lot of people mess up on this stuff, especially with building habits, is they know they want to do something, but then they don't engineer it to make themselves want to do it. And it doesn't take much. They were listing a couple of things you can do with that. And then the other thing was a prompt. So you have to have the prompt is basically something that reminds you, some sort of external stimuli that reminds you to do this action.
Right.
And but with the three of these things, then if you work on these three parts of it, it's much easier to build habits.
A big aspect of what they were talking about, which I'd never really considered with habits, but or forming habits, was he said it's almost impossible to build a habit that you're not interested in.
Yeah.
Right? So oftentimes you might say one guy on there used the example of running. He doesn't like running. He doesn't want to run. And to build a habit to do that, even though he's like, I guess you could call him an expert in building habits and good at doing it, he's like, I couldn't do it for that though. That's not how habits work.
Yeah.
He's like, there's a list of things I'm interested in. I can build habits for those, and other people can too with this strategy. What you really can't do is build a habit for something that you're just not that interested in.
Yeah.
Now, you might ask yourself, well, why would you even want to build a habit you're not interested in? Well, there's reasons for it, right? Maybe all your friends start playing golf. So you're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the driving range, you know, three times a week and get into it. But if you don't give a shit about golf, right, just because it's like something you kind of wish you could do, like, you're not gonna.
Yeah.
And it's similar in a lot of ways. I mean, I've seen that a lot with people that are trying to get into martial arts, especially jiu-jitsu. They like the idea of knowing how to do it, but they don't enjoy the journey and the process.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's not going to work.
Yeah, you have to, and like they were talking about, like the example of like reading a book. It's like, don't make it hard on yourself and choose some book you don't want to read. Find something that you actually are interested in. And that's where the motivation for it comes, because it's a lot easier to do something if you actually want to do it.
Mm-hmm. And they also brought up find the easy version of it too.
Yeah.
You know, and I always think that when I'm trying, you know, I read a lot and I like to. And I've done it so much, it doesn't bother me. If I want to read a book, it doesn't matter how many pages it has, for example. It's just like, yeah. I want to read this.
If
it's okay.
A good book, yeah.
Yeah, if people have recommended it, it's like, just fine. Give it to me. I'll read it. I'll check it out. But for people that don't have a good reading habit, it's really good idea to start small.
Yeah.
And find the niche. I mean, think of books. There's so many categories of things. You know, fiction, nonfiction, that's the two big. And then there's horror, mystery, sci-fi, like you name it. And it's just really important. And there's levels to each. There's some that are really thick and heavy.
Yeah.
Especially older novels take a lot more concentration and patience.
Or philosophy. You ever tried to read philosophy?
Well, I like self-help style.
Yeah. So, no, but I mean like Socrates. You ever read a friggin' thing from Socrates or like one of those older philosophical dudes?
Well,
I mean,
I've read Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. That was excellent.
Oh, that's a good one.
And then other books on Stoicism from the past.
Yeah.
But again, that's what I'm interested in, right?
Yeah.
But the example you give is perfect because a lot of people wouldn't be. So yeah. That is not the
and also,
bunch of books you
a lot
want
of
pick
people,
up.
Like I was saying, a lot of those older books, they're really dense and some of them can be really hard to read because mm-hmm. The issue with philosophy is there's so much, you have to go into so much detail and stuff. And so it can be really easy to be like, reading it and then you're like lost, like how did we get here? But it circles back eventually, but it's really hard to get lost. Another thing that they were talking about with kind of building habits and something that people forget to do a lot is reinforce the behavior with yourself. So congratulate yourself when you do something that's important.
Yeah.
You want to have that positive reinforcement because that's what's going to build the habit better and make it more of an unconscious thing that you do.
Sure. Can you think of a habit, that like the last major habit you built that you're proud of and still continue to do?
I think writing for me. So I'm going to school for photography, and writing is really important for that. But growing up, I mean, in high school and everything, I hated writing, hated it so much. But it was one of those things where I found something that I wanted to write about, that I cared about, so I got the motivation for it. And then as I did it more, I kind of figured out that I liked it, and I kind of fell in love with it. And I try and make sure that I'm writing a good bit of the time.
How in that process do you congratulate yourself? Is it just when you get something done?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, and a lot of people who write, breaking stuff up into little sections is big, and then makes it much easier to tackle. But I mean, yeah, once you finish a section, you know, or in your head, you're like, all right, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to do this for this amount of time. Once you're done with it, if you want to, you can continue, but you also need to acknowledge to yourself, like, oh, I did what I wanted to do. Good job, you know? Because if you don't, and you're like, oh, I did what I originally planned on doing, but I still could have done more or whatever, and you're like adding extra expectations to yourself, that's not going to be as conducive to building a habit as when you... And another thing that they were talking about was starting small, like you were saying, especially with new habits, you got to start small, and you're not going to be able to do as much as you want to originally. And because that's just not how habits form. You can't just force yourself like, oh, I've never run before, I'm going to do a 10-mile run every day. It's like, that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
It's not going
to
work.
It's going to be a mess. It's like when people go to the gym. I have worked out just forever, really, since high school, like consistently. You know, and I was active before that, but then it was like something that I've just always done. And I've gone through phases. Like when I was in my early 20s, it was like a lot more. It was like a huge part of my life. And then I realized at some point, I'm like, well, this, how big do you want to get? Or how strong do you need to be? And like, how sustainable is all this effort? So I just made it this consistent practice. But what's happened along the way is I've encouraged people that aren't active to become active, right? And there's always a timing for it. I never forced it on anyone, but usually when people are going through a hard time or they're feeling a bit depressed, it works well with men. You know, it's like, hey, you got to get this anxiety out. Like, get in there, work out, go do something. And what I noticed is the dropout rate is far less if you can get people to go literally, like, you almost can't go slow enough.
Yeah.
You, like, just the fact that you got there to the gym, great.
Good.
Now
good
do start. 15 minutes or 20, like really easy. Because if you have 2 or 3 days where your muscles are just blown out, like that's the quickest way to just drop out, or you get an injury because you did something.
Yeah, I see that a lot. And I mean, with working out especially, where people are like not into it or they have little experience, and then they get like all macho in the gym and think they're like the shit. And then they either injure themselves or they go out too fast and they burn themselves out.
Yep.
But no, you gotta find what works for you. And then just consistency is the key, I think, especially with working out.
Yeah, just a little bit.
But with any habit. The other episode that we talked about was about communication. And it was with Seema Yemin. And she's, I guess, a communications expert.
What does that mean?
She knows how to talk well.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe she has a degree or something in it.
Sure.
I think so, but...
Makes sense.
No, but she was talking a lot about how when you're trying to... when you're talking with other people and you're trying to maybe convince them of something or maybe show them a different way of thinking about it, like people have defense mechanisms immediately once you present information that doesn't fit in their head. It's not compatible in their head. And so they're immediately like, it feels like you're attacking them personally when you disagree with them. But she was kind of explaining how you can kind of navigate those, and you have to, like, rather than challenging your position on something, I might ask you about it. So like, if you say, yeah, I'm really not a big fan of tacos, rather than being like, dude, tacos are the shit, what do you mean? Like, you're just not going to have that because everyone's told you that. But if I'm like, what is it about tacos that you don't like? And I can kind of have you explain to me a little bit. It works out better because it doesn't seem like I'm attacking you in any way. And also, I'm getting a better idea of why you don't like tacos.
Right.
So it makes more sense in my head.
Yeah.
But
like, if they come back and they're just like, it's always just so spicy and it's that salsa, you're like, you could just not put that on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, that was a really smart way of kind of putting her argument. The thing that I was picking up, though, and maybe it was just the example she was using, but I was like, you're also like an agent of propaganda. Because yeah. She would talk about, even before you introduce some information, you kind of buffer it with statements about why something is a good idea.
Yeah.
And I just felt like maybe that's useful, depending on what you're doing it for, sales or in a company acquisition or just networking or whatever. You're just trying to sell your product or your brand or who you are, maybe as a lecturer. But also it's kind of dangerous too, because it didn't necessarily make your ideas correct. And that was what was coming across from her in the episode, I thought, was like she was correct about something. People were seeing it wrong, and this is how to explain it the right way.
Yeah.
But if she isn't, and she's taking a point, like she even brought up vaccine stuff, and then she's like trying to help other people understand why it's a good idea to take this. And so what she was saying is you're like, you figure out where the hurdles will be, because they're going to have their pushbacks. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of ease each of those answers. And then I'm like, and then what? You just kind of trick them into what you're thinking?
I don't know. I saw some of that. I think a lot of what she was trying to say was, through doing that, you can kind of, like I just said, you can kind of get a better idea of where people are coming from. Because oftentimes you'll get in a conversation with someone and then you find, oh, we don't see eye to eye on this. And then you'll either argue about it or you'll just move on. But I think what she was trying to say was like, you have to kind of investigate a little bit where people are coming from on some of those motivations. And that can kind of, using some of those skills that she said, can kind of help you navigate some of those tricky situations. Because, I mean, sometimes there's oftentimes, like, I'm not very big conflict guy. I don't really like arguing with people on stuff. But sometimes it's just inevitable and you're going to have differing opinions on stuff. But being able to better navigate that, I think, is kind of what she was going for. But I do agree, like, the way she was explaining some of the things, I was like, you could totally just use this to gaslight people or you know, just yeah. like make your point the only point that matters, you know.
I was thinking of
an example.
I think
it's about the motivation, though.
No, I get it. But I was just thinking of an example, like the way she set it up. I was like, okay, so if you have a group of people and then there's this area of the forest that has a bunch of poisonous snakes in, and they don't want to go over there because poisonous snakes are poisonous. So then she sits with them and tells them all these reasons why that's not the case and that it's okay and that really it's not a big deal and really not that many people have been bit. And, you know, it's like clever communication. And then all of a sudden they just go into their own danger.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's – you got to be careful of that. I think so – but I think that's like a like a different issue of like, you know, you have to make sure you know what you're talking about first.
Yeah.
You know,
or what your motivation is.
Yeah, exactly. I think she was more so just trying to explain effective communication. But I mean, like you said, that can be used for propaganda.
Right.
And a lot of the tactics are used like that oftentimes.
It's probably useful, though, just these strategies in a lot of everyday life.
Yeah.
You know, because often when you don't want to hold a conversation with somebody like an employee or someone you work with or someone you go to school with, even someone you're dating, you got an idea of what that pushback is going to be. So it can kind of position you to, I guess, it kind of ease those areas,
yeah.
You know, as you understand it. And even using the other method, you can kind of, you know, like predict those or soften those areas.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was kind of what she was saying. But I mean, I thought there was some good points in there. I mean, I'm thinking about like, you know, having tough conversations with like family or whatever it is. Like, you know, there's always those times and stuff.
Thanksgiving.
But yeah. Oh, God. But, you know, I think a lot of what she was trying to say was like, rather than push back against people, reframe what you're saying to not make it seem like you're arguing with them as much as you're just trying to understand where they're coming from. And a lot of, also one thing I liked too was a lot of what she was saying was like based on, you know, like in a conversation, you want to have it based on compassion and understanding and not like argumentative or, you know.
Sure. Well, we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
It's like meeting them in the middle. That's much easier.
Yeah.
And you may not persuade them all the way, but they're coming to the table.
Yeah. And whereas, I think also a lot of times in certain conversations, it's like, it's not your responsibility to persuade people of stuff. You know, I think a lot of times people have the idea of like, oh, I'm right about all of my views and stuff, and everyone else who has difference is wrong. But a lot of times, especially with some of these more complicated conversations that you might have, it's useful to be able to get to a point in the conversation where you can be like, all right, well, I guess we just both disagree, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But getting there in a healthy way is the most important.
Yeah, and those conversations are great. People aren't having those enough.
Yeah, exactly. You exactly.
Know? It's like they come on the news cycle, and then it's two people arguing at each other. And it's like, where did we just go here?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, don't even get me started on the news. Anyways, all right. Moving on.
Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your body.
Stop it! They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
So the next show is the Dave Ramsey Show. How much do you know about Dave Ramsey?
Not a great deal.
Really?
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I was in this magnet program that was like a personal finance program.
Uh-huh.
And I was really glad because it was the only time I ever learned about personal finances in grade school. But my teacher loved showing us clips from Dave Ramsey. I mean, loved it.
From this pod?
No, not from the podcast. But he has a bunch of like video lectures and has all of his like courses that he does online and stuff, I guess we were watching.
Right. I've seen a lot of those clips where he's like just in his office and people call in.
Yeah,
and
that's from
like
the,
in debt or
that's from this podcast.
Okay.
So most of this show now, and I don't know if this show started like this. I imagine it started with him talking about stuff, but what it's at now is there's these two other people that kind of host the show, and then Dave Ramsey is actually only in the show when they do the Q&A stuff.
Huh.
Or when they'll do like a special topic. Like the one that we talked about was the crypto one, where I guess Taylor Swift saved herself from a massive crypto lawsuit.
Right.
Did you hear about that?
No.
It was crazy. So there was
it
this
with the Sam guy? The what is that currency that like flopped and it was like billions of dollars?
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was that one. Yeah. So
Tom Brady got involved.
Yep.
And yeah.
Yeah. So they were having a bunch of celebrities endorse these crypto things somehow, and trying to get them a bunch of money, and then the company fails. So all these people lost a bunch of money. But I guess Taylor Swift was not touching that shit within a mile. And I mean, smart of her.
I think she had like a team that asked good questions, right?
Yeah.
They were like, what is this? Or like, how does this work? Whereas everyone else just took paychecks.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they were getting paid. So, yeah. But no, she was smart enough. I mean,
oh, I think it's called FTX.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That was the one. Yeah. Yep. That was it. That was the one. Yeah. That was fucking crazy. I mean, billions of dollars were lost.
Dude. Unreal. What's that guy's name? Sam Bankman-Fried. There we go. Yeah. And he paid a ton of people. Even one of the guys from Shark Tank.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I'm
and it's
sure.
Like, hey, dude, aren't you supposed to be a money guy? You should have been paying attention to
Yeah, aren't you
to
supposed
this.
To know this? No, but the Ramsey Show, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of positions that he has on money that are very, very people disagree with. Like, yeah. He's a big fan of like having no debt. Ever. He's like, pay cash for everything, which in some instances, I mean, obviously you shouldn't put everything on credit and money that you don't have. But if you have money, you can use debt to your favor.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a bunch of tax benefits. You can borrow money against you. It's tax-free. Like
that rich dad, poor dad guy.
Yep.
It's those books are really interesting. And really all he's done is, I think it was like buying houses and then refinancing them and then getting more money and then buying more property. And now he's like commercial real estate. And
yeah.
It's literally none of his money ever.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what he was talking about. So, I mean, some of the positions that Dave has on things, I think, are a little bit kind of old school and maybe not as up to date as today. But I mean, people still call in. The one woman who called in, it was quite funny. She called, and I guess having a weird living situation, her husband, their parents, who are retired, I guess, are like living with them, and they've been doing so for a while. And so she's kind of getting a little bitter because obviously she's trying to not live with this dude's parents and just wants to live with him, but I guess he's being pretty stubborn about it. But I mean, they gave her great advice. They're like, listen, you need to prioritize for yourself and then have a conversation with this dude about what you need to do. And I feel like most of the advice that they give is pretty reasonable.
I mean, imagine that situation.
That's gotta suck.
That's a tricky one.
That's gotta suck, I mean,
but also, how sad is it for the guy's parents?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, you've lived your whole life. You're supposed to be saving for your own retirement, but it's not as easy as people think, and it doesn't take a lot, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, especially people that lost everything in that 2008 collapse.
Yeah.
Financial. I mean,
or COVID.
Right, too.
You know?
Yeah, you lose a business, and then it's like, God, you better hope you got some kids that can help you out.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And for this poor girl, you were like, hey, we're trying to start our life here.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of where she was at. But yeah, they were just like, listen, girl, you need to talk to this man and you need to tell him what you think.
I like that he's like hard line with his advice too.
Yeah, he doesn't sugarcoat things. No. He's not afraid to like tell people, hey, you're probably not taking the best course of action right now. Like you should try differently.
He's often like, how much do you make? Okay, you make this one that much,
yeah,
and you spend this much, and then you're doing these things, and then in that way, and you have this much credit card debt?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of wild how quickly here just kind of, you know, deconstruct their life. And
yeah, and I think a lot of people call in for the show looking for that, because he's really good at it.
Mm.
But I don't know. I was kind of bummed. Like, I had to kind of not dig, but if you look at the Ramsey show, not a lot of them are even with him anymore. It's just these other two people that he has doing the show, and he's in like, oh, I mean, I've just flipped through like eight of them, and he's in one now finally, but it's like every five shows he's in one.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we're podcasters, and I do multiple podcasts. If one is growing at a good rate and I have a good team that could switch me out, I mean, he's probably looking at the growth rate, right? So for you, it's like you like that guy, you want him to be in there. I'm sure a lot of the audience are the same way, but you can pass the trust on to somebody else and then occasionally step back in.
I think the other two people on the show, they were good. They seemed like they were knowing what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So the last podcast that we have is the BPD podcast, episode 260. This is about the Fox News lawsuit and everything. But before we get into that, there was a question, or there was a little discussion briefly before they got into that about Rogan. And I'm interested to hear your point. So they were basically trying to say that if Elon Musk and Joe Rogan got together and made like some big public announcement telling people not to vote Democrat, how many views would they skew over? Like, how many millions of views could they skew? Which I think is a dumb question, because that's just not who Rogan is. Like, Rogan is not a political dude. He cares because he's smart, but he's not the kind of dude to like be like, hey, everyone, fucking, you know.
He's not telling people what to do.
Yeah, that's just not him. He's yeah. just not looking for, to do that at all.
No.
And I don't really know that Elon Musk is either.
Yeah, I think – I just don't think that they would take that line. If they saw something really messed up happening, they might talk a lot about the event around it and how they don't trust what the event is.
Yeah.
Or maybe the leadership in place. But it's a dangerous precedent if you've got an audience like both of them have. And in a weird way, I don't know who has a bigger audience, realistically. I mean, Joe does for podcasting. He's about 13 million downloads yeah. per episode. But Elon is like one of the most followed people on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think he has like over 100 million follows.
I think if you compared like how many people listen to them, I think Rogan wins. Because of his show.
Right.
But I mean, as far as their influence, I don't know. That's a good question. At least public influence.
I think people probably, if a statement came out of both of them, people would be more likely to listen to Elon just because he is such, he's like clearly known as an intellectual.
Yeah.
People listen to Rogan as well, but even Rogan says a lot of times, look, don't listen to me, I'm dumb.
Yeah.
So, which is not true.
I saw a thing recently. Elon Musk, I guess, took away the New York Times's check mark on Twitter
check,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And he tweeted and he was like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something along the lines of like their propaganda or whatever. And he's like, they are not trusted at all. And that's why he took it away. And I was like, that's such a baller move.
It's wild.
I mean, but honestly, though, like he's so right about it. Like they're all, oh, I think he said something about along the lines of their propaganda isn't even interesting.
Yeah. If you're going to make it up, at least make it interesting. For
yeah.
sure.
But no, I mean. Yeah, I don't know. And they spent like 10 minutes talking about this question, and
it seemed unnecessary.
It did, yeah. And I'm just thinking about it. And like I said, I mean, that's just Rogan is just not that kind of guy. Like he's not trying to persuade people to vote one way or another. I think he's smart enough to understand that the whole political system, the two side party, is a joke anyways.
Right.
And
it just seemed like more of a what if.
Yeah,
and,
I think it was
and
more of
what
a hypothetical
the effects would be.
Question, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So not so much that it could ever happen, but if it did, let's gauge how much power both of these two people have potentially. And it's probably a lot more than people want to believe. You know,
yeah.
Especially if you're haters of either of those two. It's like, well, sorry folks, they have a ton of influence.
I mean, during the 2020 election, I think, didn't Joe say he was going to vote Biden or something like that? And that was like a huge news deal.
No.
Everyone lost, or what was it?
It was, I think
or,
it was.
Or was it Bernie?
Bernie.
Yeah.
He was I want to vote
and
Bernie.
And people lost their fucking minds over that. Yeah.
And really quickly, those same people, a few years later, were calling
like,
him right far
right. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like will you make your mind up? He can't go too left and he can't go too right. It's just like, it's either today agree with me or you suck.
Yeah, exactly. It's whatever is the status quo right now is what's factual.
Yeah. And I think he has said that maybe he said he couldn't vote for Biden as well because he just thinks that
I think
the
he
guy
did
probably
say
has
that,
dementia.
Yeah.
Which often when you hear it Biden talked, it's somewhat reasonable to be like, how are you this confused?
I mean, the AIs of Biden sound more coherent than his actual voice.
Maybe we could just replace him with ChatGPT.
I'm surprised they haven't already, honestly. Like, how hard would it be to just dress some other dude, look exactly like Biden, and then just... I mean, he can't even read off of a prompt anymore.
It's a struggle. We should get some bigger prompts. I think they're talking in this next election about not having debates. They're trying to get out of it because they're worried about Biden's ability to get through it.
Is that
but
why?
Then you have to think, well, because during the last one, it was COVID. So they were using that excuse. Oh, it's all about safety. Well, why couldn't they have just put them in two different rooms and done it like just a video? You know, it was like there were a lot of ways. They still could have done it safely, but it just seemed like they wanted to kind of take
him
out.
Didn't they have one, though? They had one debate between
I think they did, yeah.
I don't know if I watched it. I'm sure it was hilarious.
Yeah. But Trump seemed angry. I think that's why he lost.
Oh,
instead of being like laid back and pointing out all the flaws in the system and saying some funny things to Hillary, which he did, which obviously got people really excited.
Yeah, those were epic.
They were some great burns. You know, he was just kind of angry, you know?
Yeah. I think he lost a lot of credibility, too, with the whole election fraud thing. I mean, that was
massive.
That was not the way to do it. All right. So anyways.
Back to Fox News.
They were talking about, and we've got a clip, about Fox News getting sued. Let's just play the clip.
Fox to pay $787 million to settle election suit, Dominion says. This is a Bloomberg story. Fox News has agreed to pay $787 million to settle Dominion voting system defamation lawsuit when alleged that the network aired bogus claims that Dominion rigged the 2020 election against Donald Trump. Evidence uncovered in the case showed that Fox News executives and top hosts like Tucker Carlson privately derived the conspiracy theory as loony, even as they promoted it. The settlement ends the possibility of a trial in which Rupert Murdoch, the chairman of Fox Corp, and his son would have to testify about their oversight of the network's new presentations. The settlement allows Fox News to avoid having to flatly apologize, which means neither Tucker and the other folks won't have to apologize.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is what really grinds my gears about this. I mean, you can just completely lie on the news, spread false information, spread propaganda about an election, the biggest event in our country, aside from the Super Bowl, the election, and you just pay, $780 billion is a lot of money.
A million.
Million.
Yeah.
That's a lot
still
of money.
Still a lot of money.
A lot of money. But, I mean, you can just literally lie and then pay people off and then not have to testify at all. Like, that's absolutely insane to me.
And the real question is, if what were your viewership that whole time, and how much money did you make that whole time?
Yeah.
It better be substantially less than the fine they paid, because otherwise we're getting into the world of like how pharmaceutical companies work, where they make a drug that's bullshit and they knew it was, they make billions of dollars, and then they fine them $1 billion.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's only going to encourage people to continue.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing, though, is like they have, I get why they did it. They didn't want anyone to get up on the stand because they're just going to get annihilated if they're
for sure.
If they're on testimony, having to testify about the inner workings of Fox News. But I mean, come on, guys, this is ridiculous. You can just pay off and just lie to people, lie to millions of people.
They should legally have to take the word news out of the title of their show.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think it's just Fox News. It's not just.
Oh, they're all.
They're all doing the same thing.
They just backed a really dangerous horse that they didn't think through.
Yeah.
Like, surely they had lawyers that were like, guys, if we get this wrong, like, this is going to be a giant lawsuit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think at some point they must have believed that there could be some truth to it, but you've got to back off and be willing to say, oh, yeah, we really fucked up on that.
They won't even admit guilt, though.
Dude, like, they've never mentioned it on their station.
Of course not.
As far as I can tell.
Yeah, no, why would they? But, I mean, the fact that you can just pay, not have to testify, and then not have to apologize as well, like, that one really got me.
Yep.
Like, okay, maybe you avoid testifying, but you should have to apologize and say, hey, guys, we were lying to you, we fucked up. But no, they just write a check and that's it.
Well, what's scary is there are plenty of people in this nation that only listen and watch Fox News.
Yeah.
So they have only heard tiny bits of information about what this lawsuit is or what it's like. If they never acknowledge it on their channel, at least to those people, it's like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And they've never made any mistakes. So it's all about keeping confidence.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's bullshit.
It's so bullshit. I mean, I think, though, looking at this, I'm glad that at least it's public that they got sued and everything.
Mm-hmm.
At least that creates a little bit of doubt. But yeah, I mean, I was just like, come on, this is a joke. I have read an interesting stat recently. All of the mainstream media corporations like Fox, ABC, all of those guys, they're all owned by six companies, and they have 271 executives, all mainstream media companies.
Wow.
Yeah, six companies.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's, again, I mean, we talked about this previously on the show, that the intellectual dishonesty is insane.
Yeah.
And there's no penalty. Like, they're making money doesn't really matter. Like, yeah, $780 million is a lot of money. But mm-hmm. still, money is a number, like, to them. It doesn't exist. It's like, oh shit, we fucked up. But, you know, we're still fine. They still making billions.
Yeah.
You know, in the long
term. Get some PR people and start spreading a new type of trust us type propaganda story.
But I think it really highlights with news companies, and I think big corporations do this all the time, whereas, like, if you can just write a check and keep your integrity, that's what they're going to do because it's worth so much more.
Yeah. Shocking. Oh, and it's like politicians too. I mean, if the news never has to apologize, why would politicians?
Yeah, no, and they never do.
And then we have that whole system set up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a mess.
It's a mess. Anyways, that's the episode we've got for you guys this week. Just to run through how I built this with Gary Vee,
mm-hmm.
Think Fast, Talk Smart, The Dave Ramsey Show, and the BPD Podcast episode 260. I'll have all the links in the description below. I'll include a couple of funny Gary Vee videos just because they're legendary.
Excellent.
And I'll throw some other stuff in there for you guys. But thank you for joining us. That's all we have.
Later.